Hey everybody, welcome to Street Fight Radio. We have now entered the new era of Street Fight. Three times a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I'm going to be uploading a show, probably at like the very last moment, but it's definitely going to be happening. And that means we're going to have a lot more content that Brian and I are personally interested in, that we don't feel has to be ethical or socially justice oriented. So we want to just hang out with people that we like and bring more guests on. Brian has been able to quit one day of driving. So with that extra time, y'all are getting a lot of extra shows, and we'll keep continue doing that. Thank you to all of you that support us over on Patreon. You really are making this happening. Sound like a boo. The live show is happening February 16th. In Columbus, Ohio. We're going to do a live podcast at Cafe Kerouac. Free admission, doors at 7, show at 8. And then Chicago, Illinois, we will be there March 2nd, Thursday, at the Township Bar. I'm going to get information out very soon about that. Expect more. So today, well, my name is Brett Payne, of course. My co-host is Brian Quimby. You know us well. But today we have a very special guest. Brian was on his show just a few months ago, and Brian has been a huge fan of his for a long time as well. He's told me to listen to the podcast several times. So today we have Aubrey Sitterson from the Straight Shoot podcast. How's it going, Aubrey?
Good, man. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be one of your first unethical guest choices.
Yes. Actually, you're probably, the Chapo boys are the unethical ones we have on here. They get in a lot of trouble, those boys, but I don't think you're going to get us in trouble.
No, I wouldn't dare to couple of good boys like you. I wouldn't dream of it.
Well, it's just the guilt of sometimes talking about a lot of wrestling when there's people in the streets, you know, ready to change the world. I kind of feel like my attention is focused on those battles and organizing and things like that. And so it's nice to have somebody come on and talk about the greatest sport.
The one true sport.
That's what
professional wrestling.
It's the only honest sport is what
it is, man. There's an old saying. I don't know who came up with it originally, but it was like an old, like crusty, like territories days saying, is that the only real sports were roller derby and wrestling. Right? It's like now people think now, I feel like I have to qualify this now, but like now roller derby is a sport, right? But it used to be much more akin to wrestling. It was all fixed and scripted and everything. But are we talking about pro wrestling? What are we talking about?
I mean, we will.
You tell me what to talk about, and I'll do it, man. I'm here for you.
Well, thank you for helping us iron this thing out. So we do want to consider these things to be a street fight as well. We're basically we're jumping more people into our gang to take a look at the news and to offer their opinions on some of the stuff we normally street fighting about.
But first, we're going to talk about wrestling, of course. So you were the first person to come and get me and let me be on your wrestling show after I went on Facebook and whined that nobody ever has me on their wrestling show.
I gotta credit my pal Dan Doughty, who like tagged me. He was like, "Oh, Aubrey, leading light of the dirtbag left. Brian Quimby wants to talk about wrestling. You should." And honestly, like, so I'm bad. I don't listen to a whole lot of podcasts because I work from home and most of my work is writing based, and I can't have people yammering at me while I'm doing that. So I wasn't familiar with your stuff, but like he turned me onto it, and I got like 20 minutes into an episode of Street Fight. I was like, oh yeah, this guy needs to come on. this needs to happen. Yes, exactly.
I had a meltdown a little bit after we recorded because I was like, oh God, we talked about politics quite a bit there, and his listeners probably hate me, but they actually responded well. I haven't seen them really yell at you until recently for your politics.
Well, yeah, my audience is, so it's a wrestling podcast and YouTube show. It's called Straight Shoot, and it's, you know, it's a wrestling show. I mean, and we do talk primarily about wrestling, but I think that, like, I've always had kind of a very specific approach on things, and it's my thinking is, and I think I told this to you before you came on, because I tell everybody when they come on, it's like, listen, this is not one of those, like, let's talk about everything that Vince McMahon is doing wrong. And let's talk about all the dumb decisions he's made and how he doesn't get it and how I should be booking it. And this is what they should do for the next year and a half. Because this stuff's, it's nonsense and it's boring. And I think it's much more interesting to talk about what's good and why than to, like, complain about things. And so that's, like, a very specific conscious choice for the approach that I have. But I think that it appeals to a certain type of fan too. So for the most part, my audience is pretty progressive. I think that there are a lot more left-leaning wrestling fans than anybody really realizes. But even in that set, I think that my audience skews a little bit further left and a little bit more open-minded and is willing to hear, like, they trust me to bring them something interesting every week. And it's not always exclusively wrestling related, but that's the core. That's where we start.
Well, I know that there were times I listened for a very long time, like a few years ago, and now I'm back in after doing the show. I love your show.
Why did you stop?
Really good wrestling show.
What was the final straw? Like, what made you throw your hands up and say, fuck this Sitterson guy?
I think you want to know what it is. I think it was your ruthless positivity about WWE that sometimes I was like, come on, man, you know that sucks.
Yeah.
But like, after talking to you, like, through DM and talking to you on your show, I'm like, you know what? He's not even saying this stuff's great. I got the impression a lot of times, or I get the impression now that you're like, you're being positive about what's there, but that doesn't mean that you're overly positive about what's happening. You know what I mean?
That's
good.
Well, that's it. I mean, you brought it up already, but like now that you're on the inside, now that you're one of my dudes, you can get the unfiltered Sitterson bile and vitriol anytime you want, because it is a running faucet. You just have to DM me. I'm not a super positive guy, but that tone was a conscious decision, just because I knew that it wasn't. Every wrestling podcast is so relentlessly negative and angry and bitter, and they just hate everything, that I try, you know, I figured they've got that covered. If WWE does something like profoundly stupid and awful, everybody in the internet's gonna be talking about that. I'd rather pick out the match that's actually really good and talk about why that's good. So part of it is, like, from a critical perspective, like, that's why I do it like that. But also, it's a branding concern too, right? Like, something I learned, I took way too long to learn. And I learned it from watching a friend of mine. His name is Ryan Panagos. And he's Agent M on Twitter. And he's, like, this big social media guy from Marvel. And he started at Marvel when I was working as an editor there. And I always liked Ryan, and he's a pal of mine. I like him a lot. But I remember being kind of put off by his relentless positivity online. Just, he loved everything, and he was just always talking about stuff that he adored and how great it was. And it grated on me, because I was just such an angry, bitter pile of neuroses. But then I talked to that guy, and I realized, no, that guy hates as much stuff as anybody hates, but he just has the good sense not to just be spouting bile all the time, because nobody wants that. Like, that's exhausting to read on the internet all the time. I mean, it's one thing. So I'll qualify that. It's one thing to be spouting bile about, like, politics and, like, things that matter, right? like actual important issues. It's another to be, like, furious about Thor casting or whatever, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate that as well, because I think the conversation I have about wrestling with people, it's about the shit that I fucking love. Like, even just a weird movement, a way someone, you know, jerks their head, or the way that they flip their hair, or the way that they execute something. It's just amazing. Like, me and Brian can get so worked up about a match. And then at the same time, there is, even the majority of people that don't watch it have a completely horrible opinion of it. And people are very negative about it. And it's like, we aren't watching this because it's terrible. There are amazing things that happen in live entertainment that can only happen inside the squared circle.
There's a lot of craft on display, man. There's a ton of craft on display. And I mean, you're right. Like, I mean, the most impressive things to me are the little moments, right? Like, the heel turns to the camera and does an evil grin, right? Like, Charlotte is really great at that right now. You know, she just knows exactly where the camera is and exactly how to look at it to sell whatever motion she did. And it's way more important than whatever move that she just put on somebody. And, you know, I think, dude, I think tying in with that, I think, and this is going to sound really arrogant, so I'll explain after I say it, but I think a lot of people, a lot of wrestling fans don't really like wrestling, and it's fine. Like, it's not, I'm not, this isn't a judgment call that they're watching it wrong or anything, but I think for a lot of people, more and more people, especially as wrestling has kind of experienced its recent spurt in popularity, what people are responding to is the camp and the there's kind of an ironic detachment from it. They're responding to the crowd participation aspects. They're responding to like backstage segments and you know, and it's, people just see it as like, oh, well, it's like the new comic books and we're going to engage with it in the same way by just kind of like falling in love with these characters. And I think that for me, and this informs how Straight Shoot works and what we talk about on there too, for me, all of that stuff is great and it's fine. It can be really fun, but it's really at the end of the day, just an excuse for people to fight. And that's the real appeal, is two people in the ring fighting each other. Right. Yeah. And everything else is an excuse. Everything else is just like the MacGuffin to get them wailing on each other. And that's, I mean, to me, that's where the real artistry is too. Right. Because it's a partially improvised thing where they've got a roadmap and they have to play off the audience. Like when they're doing it well, it's very improvised and they choose their spots and stuff based on how the audience are receiving things. Yeah, man. I think it's, I think that I tell people, I think wrestling is a lot like, it's like X-Men comics, right? Which is to say it, most of them are bad. Most wrestling is really awful. Most X-Men comics, just on the balance, right, are nearly unreadable, right? It's just like, it's just journeyman hack work. But when it's good, when it's on point, and when people are using, they're not victims of the tropes, but they're using the tropes and using all this stuff, I don't think there's anything better. I don't think there's anything better than a good wrestling match, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a live energy that they're grabbing onto and trying to rein in all of this energy and get everybody into what's going on inside the ring. And when they do it, it feels amazing. And Charlotte and Sasha are too, where I'm always like, I think they're injured. Like, I always think that someone got injured and someone wasn't supposed to do that. I'm always like, I don't think she was supposed to do that.
Sasha gets hurt all the goddamn time. So like, that's why you think that.
That's true. She goes for it. Same with Seth Rollins is turning.
Seth Rollins gets hurt. That bumps me out. But yeah.
Yeah. So what I think I want to turn it around here, since you recently have decided, the man who I took a break from for being relentlessly positive about World Wrestling Entertainment, yeah, has made an announcement on the show, and I'm going to let you do it in your own words on Street.
Yeah. So I mean, like, I'm not going to give you the whole thing here because I don't want to take up too much of your time with it, and it, also it's on my show, like from last night. Yeah. with Excalibur. You should go watch. Excalibur is one of the founders of PWG, and he's their liaison to the board of directors, and he opens every show, and he's their commentator. So like, he's a big part of PWG. I had him on my show, and we talked all about it last night. But yeah, so I decided, so first of all, it has nothing to do with the quality of the wrestling. Because the fact of the matter is, I honestly believe this. If you want to watch wrestling, you should watch WWE because it's the best. They have the best wrestlers. They have the best production. It's the best wrestling. It's the biggest and it's the best wrestling promotion in the entire world. I honestly believe that. So it's not a question of quality or anything like that that's made me turn away. I had a weird week. My wife is, she's born in China, but she was born to two American citizens, right? She's ethnically Chinese, right? They're Chinese. Her parents are Chinese. She was born in China. She lived there until she was five, and then she came here. So she's an American citizen, but she happens to have been born in China. And she was in China for Chinese New Year, visiting family and doing stuff. And I was, I was back here with the beasts, the pets. And this was the weekend that Trump did the Muslim ban, right? And it was banning entry from, you know, specific countries, which is illegal. It's something we decided many, many years ago that we're not doing anymore as a country. It's something that we had done before to the Chinese, right? The Chinese Exclusion Act, right? That's a thing. And I instantly, and I had also been reading all these articles about, you know, Trump and China like rattling their sabers at each other, right? And like, you know, the threat of trade war and like actual war and stuff like that. And I saw, you know, American citizens and people with green cards and people who had already been cleared and had a right to be here not being allowed to come in and being detained at the airport. And I got really scared. And I had to use WeChat because that's what they use in China. And so I WeChatted Queenie. And I was like, you need to come home. You need to get your ass home. Like, change your flight. Like, because I just don't want to fuck around with this. And she's much calmer than I am. And she's like, it's fine. And she was right. It was fine. And she came home. It was okay. But during that period, like so that was going on. And I was very like angsty and worked up over that.
Yeah. Panic sets in.
Yeah, man. I mean, which is because like, I just saw it spin out. You know what I'm saying? I saw, you know, Trump decides he's going to start talking tough about currency manipulation and trade deficits and start shoving China around. And then China escalates. And then they say, okay, well, fuck it. We can't let any more Chinese people in. And then Queenie can't come home. Right. Man. Like, that sounds alarmist. I realize that because now she's home. But at the time, like, it didn't seem all that far fetched.
When you say it sounds, you took the logical steps that I would have taken and exactly the same. Like, I might have flipped out probably harder than you, but that's because I'm insane.
He's a spiraler.
Yeah, but I spiraled. That's what I call it. Like,
I was here by myself too. So that's a part of it too. I work from home and I was just at home, just spinning it around in my head all day, eating 10 milligram gummies just by the handful, right? Like
so gotta calm the nerves.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I don't know, like, it may have helped, it may have hurt, I'm not sure, but that's what I was doing. And so I was freaking out about that. And then meanwhile, like, Queenie and I had, my wife's name is Queenie, so we had talked about how, you know, so I grew up in the South. I grew up in Richmond, Virginia, and we had talked about like just being ready to engage when necessary if we see any like nasty shit from my relatives and people I know from Richmond and stuff. And I've been really fortunate during the campaign that I didn't have to, and because nothing came up. And there was like one uncle who's a real racist asshole who I had unfriended years ago because he got up in my ass about like, I shared, my tattoo artist was doing a fundraiser for Planned Parenthood, and my uncle like got all up in my ass about them like selling baby corpses and stuff. Right. He's that guy. And so I had gotten rid of that. Like, that guy wasn't involved in, you know, in my life at all anymore. He hasn't been for years. And so I haven't really had to deal with it. But then I started seeing, you know, my dad would post something kind of benign, but then like his racist friends would like hop on and like say this awful stuff. And like, I wasn't, and this is a while back too. So while Queenie was here, and like, I showed it to her, I was like, oh, this is awful, right? And she's like, you should respond. You should get up in, you should fucking, you should wade in there. Cause I was thinking, you know, I'm just not gonna get involved.
Well, that's what we've actually always preached, that even if you don't know what you're doing, just going in there and creating a clusterfuck is for them enough for them to be like post shy in the future.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, and I was thinking, oh, you know, just decorum and like, it's just unnecessary. And like, what am I going to get out of it? But then when I have my minority Chinese wife say, yeah, you're obligated to get up in there, I was like, well, all right. And I rolled up my sleeves and just
white boys got to listen to POC.
Yeah, man. I just shoved my dick in there. It just got to work. And so I had been doing that. And then like, but it hadn't really happened much, right? Until Trump took off, or until like the election was done, right? And I started seeing it come out more and more. And then once he actually took office, it was really disconcerting because people who had not posted any of this shit during the campaign are now posting it, right? Because they're emboldened and they feel like it's okay to say all this awful shit. And so I felt morally compelled. I felt morally obligated to call that shit out and just be like, no, that's not acceptable. You're being a bigot.
I mean, I had an image for quite a while of being a person that would just fight on Facebook. And I'm talking about like, and this is in our early days of our radicalization. So I would get in a fight and I'd be like, here's three articles. Please go back and read those and come back and then we'll discuss each point.
Right.
And I discovered
reading assignments. How did that go over?
I discovered that people
like a fart in church, probably.
But you did have a pretty good always respond policy. Like, you never got ad hominem. Like, I remember you were really focused. You're like, I'm not going to make any assertions about them as a human being. I'm not going to use any expletives or anything like that. I'm just going to plainly rebut everything they say.
And you would go on 60 comments deep.
Yeah. And it ended up taking so much more out of me than I was getting anything back. Like, yeah. I was never going to win an argument with this person.
Well, and that's, I think that's an important distinction, right? I mean, because I had learned that lesson long, right? I used to fight about everything, just anything, right? You know, the color.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah.
Is it blue gray or a gray blue sky today, right? Like, whatever. Like, I would just, everything was a matter of life and death. I was a delight as a teenager, as I'm sure you can imagine. But I had moved off of that, but this is different. And I think that the reasons to engage with these guys isn't to convince them, because you're not going to, and you're certainly not going to convince them on a Facebook post. The reason to do is what you mentioned earlier, which is just, it's to make a mess, is to get
make
in
it and uncomfortable.
To make them uncomfortable, to remind them that those views are not going to be like shrugged at. Right. And that kind of behavior and that kind of talk, and to make them uncomfortable. I have a really good friend named Chris Radke, and he's starting up a podcast called Lava Toilet. And that's because I watched him do this to his entire like racist, like New York area Italian family during the campaign. And like the thinking is like, you know, you can't just take a shit in their house. It needs to be an overflowing shit volcano. Right. That they have to address, that they have to deal with. Right. So I was really combative, and that uncle I mentioned earlier waded in, and it got really, really personal. Like, he got really personal and brought my family, like brought my dad into it, and was like, he said that like my dad was going to die and that he was going to see me at the funeral and that I wouldn't leave Virginia.
Holy, yeah, that's too much.
I mean, well, and so I got really nasty back with him too, right? Like, I told him I was going to kick his crippled knees out from under him and titty fuck him.
Yeah, I mean, it gets real on Facebook.
It gets really real. I mean,
family fights the hardest.
But that's the thing, man. I mean, this guy's a bigoted asshole, and he came in and he showed his ass, and he got really personal with me, and so I went back really hard at him, and it became like a big family thing. And he started threatening my dad too, right? Like, it's insane.
I'm sorry to laugh, but it's crazy.
I mean, so this is while Queenie's out of town, right? And he calls my dad, and tells him that if he ever sees him on the road, he better be armed.
Whoa, yeah, you can't do that. What is?
Well, he's a lunatic. He's a drug addict. He's a drug addict and a lunatic. And not like cool drugs like we like bad drugs, right? He's the worst. And it just got really, really nasty. And it was like this whole big thing. And I didn't feel bad about it.
No.
I felt morally vindicated. I felt like I did the right thing, because it also kind of forced my parents to take a stand too, right?
Right.
Which I also was really proud of. And I was proud of them. And I called and thanked them and told them I was proud of them for doing it. And also, that guy, my uncle's an asshole, so fuck him. But so that happened. And then
I did a similar thing with my own mom. Like,
yeah, he went at it with his mom on Facebook. Jesus. Yeah. I mean,
did he threaten a titty fucker? That was probably inappropriate, right?
No, I didn't go that far. I do have to say the internet rules are different than real life. I mean, people are way more nasty than they will. People won't say shit to your face. That's the thing. Averting the gaze if you're in real life.
Yeah, I mean, this guy thought so that happened. So this is my headspace, right? Queenie's still not home. I don't know what's going on with, you know, if she, like, who knows? Because she was gone for like 2 weeks. So there's plenty of time for Trump to start a trade war with China, right? There's more than enough time.
Yeah, he did a lot in a few days.
I know. And so that's going on. And then I have a friend who I know voted for Trump, and I know is a Trump supporter. And I just don't talk politics with him. I avoid it, right? Just because I like him, and
I have those people in my life. You don't have to cut them out. I know what you're talking about.
That's the thing. And I didn't want to cut him out, and I didn't want to be that guy. And I thought that, you know, like, because I don't think he's a dumb guy. I don't think he's an evil guy. I think he's just a guy who hasn't thought about all of the things, right? And I realized that, like, I felt really strongly that, you know, the way to win that guy over was just slowly. And naturally, right? Like, yeah. I don't need to sit. That guy doesn't hear a lecture from me, right?
No.
But I purposely didn't want to cut him out. And he really wanted me to come over and hang out one night. It was like the day after that, right? The day after the big blow up with my uncle and stuff. And I was like, yeah, man, I'm just really busy, and I just don't want to come over. And the real answer is I didn't want to hang out with that guy, knowing that he's a Trump supporter, like in the midst of all this stuff. I just didn't feel like doing it, right?
Yeah, and, I mean, you might have even blown up on him.
Well, that's the thing. And so here's what
you
happened.
You might have threatened to titty fuck him.
That's what I do, right? So here's the thing. That's my, like, whenever anybody threatens violence on me, my first move is to say something really aggressively sexual back at them.
Yeah,
because I know that anybody who likes to threaten violence, like any guy who likes to threaten violence on another guy, the last thing they want is a guy saying something sexual at them.
That's true.
So that's always my go-to move. But anyways, he kept pushing me, and he's like, "Oh, well, why not? Like, what's going on?" I was like, "Well, listen." I was like, "Man, Queenie's out of town. I'm worried about, like, she's in China. I'm worried about this, and like, I know, like, I don't want to argue politics with you." And like, he kept on pushing. He's like, "Well, listen, I support Trump, and you know, I support, you know, all the stuff." And he's like, "You know, the thing about Queenie, that's ridiculous. She's an American citizen. Like, I would I'd help you bury the bodies if somebody discriminated against her." And I was like, "Well, like, how can I believe that when you're okay with, like, discriminating against people from Iran? Like, how can I possibly believe you saying that?" And he's like, "Right, well, listen, you know,
there's version of yourself attached to those people that are being detained."
I know. And so, like, he just didn't get it, and like, was really adamant about it. And he was like, "Well, listen, I support the immigration rules, and you know, we should be banning those people." And blah, 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 blah. I was like, "Well, listen, man, I can't hang out with you right now. I can't hang out with you tonight. Like, I can't do it." And so, in the span of like a few days, taking what I didn't think were like outrageously principled stances, what I just thought were like the bare minimum of like being a good human, I caused a huge blow up with my uncle, right? Like, and all this stuff with my family. I effectively lost a friend. He and his wife have now unfollowed me on Twitter, right? That's a big step.
That really hurts.
It does, kind of, right?
Don't follow me anymore.
It does. I mean, I've effectively lost a friend because of it.
You know what, though? I respect the shit out of this, man. Like, I don't think I have Brett and I, because of the nature of what we do, we're anarchists, we're very radical. I think if anybody voted for Trump that's in our periphery, they wouldn't tell anybody, because if it got back to Brett and I, it'd be a problem.
Yeah. You know? And it is a problem. Like, it's always been a problem for me, but it's been a problem that I was privileged enough not to have to confront so directly. And so, And so what happened was, during that weekend, you know, I started to see, you know, we weren't very many steps removed from it affecting me in a very real way. And that brought things into much clearer perspective. Right. And, you know, it's one thing. And so, and this is going to come into play later too, but like, it's one thing to support Trump when he's running. It's one thing to support Trump before he takes office. It's another thing to support Trump once you see him doing these awful, bigoted, terrible things. You know what I'm saying? Because there was always like this plausible deniability of like, "Oh, we didn't think he was actually going to do it." And like, "No, he's not going to follow through with that. It's just big talk. He's just trying to, you know, rile up the base." But like, once he actually starts doing those things, if you're still supporting them, well, then you don't really have an excuse anymore.
The 5-year-old kid, you're saying that's okay. You're saying that's what you support.
Yeah.
Because we have valid evidence now of what it means to say I support Donald Trump. And that's one part.
Exactly.
It's a 5-year-old kid. It's a 5-year-old girl in handcuffs.
Exactly. I know. That's the thing. I mean, and like, and I tried to explain this to him too. And like, I said, "Listen, I mean, what you're saying to me now is that if Queenie got denied entry or detained, you'd be okay with that. Because Trump said it sits for the safety of the country. If they decided that they wanted to start rounding up Asian people in internment camps again, you'd be okay with that. Like, that's what you're telling me right now." So that happened. And like, the same weekend was actually Royal Rumble and NXT TakeOver, right?
Which, good weekend, though, usually.
It was a great weekend. It was really good wrestling. But here's the thing, man. I had my big post-Royal Rumble show planned. It was a really good one. Go check it out. And I knew I had to watch Royal Rumble and NXT TakeOver because we're going to need to talk about them. But I'll be honest with you. Like, the last thing I wanted to fucking do while I'm sitting here wringing my hands about just everything was sit down and watch WWE, who – I mean, I'm sure some of your listeners know, but like, maybe not. Like, good personal, the McMahons, who are the majority, they, you know, it's a publicly traded company, but the McMahon family owns like the vast, vast majority of the stock. So it's still their company, right? They're good personal friends with Donald Trump. They gave him millions of dollars and effectively bought Linda McMahon a spot in his administration, right? And again, this isn't new information. I worked at WWE. I know that those people are like arch conservatives, right? That's not a surprise, but it's different. It's different once they're actually supporting the things happening. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's one thing if they just give a bunch of money and then nothing comes of it. I don't know. It was like this confluence of events. And the last thing I wanted to do was watch Royal Rumble and TakeOver. I did, because I do, you know, like you guys, I have a Patreon, and, you know, I promise content to people, and it's my responsibility to these folks to give them the content I promised. And so I watched, and I did the show afterwards. I didn't watch Raw and SmackDown that week, just because I couldn't bring myself to. I just didn't want to deal with it. And so last week on my show, like the previous week, we just talked about other stuff. We talked about wrestling related stuff. We didn't talk about anything topical. And while I was doing that, I was thinking, you know, so just by taking like what I considered like bare minimum principled stances, big fight with my uncle, lost a friend, right? Lost days of my life just dealing with this drama, right? If I'm willing to sacrifice a friend and a family member to, you know, being morally upright, you know, why am I then okay with doing what amounts to a 90-minute advertisement for WWE every single week?
That right? is, I admire you for not, for, like, the way you're talking about this is like you're cutting off a limb. Like, it would be a significant portion of my life if I couldn't bring myself to watch Monday Night Raw and SmackDown and the pay-per-views. Like, that feels like I'm gonna cry just thinking about that.
It is a big deal. I mean, like, it sounds like a silly thing. It's like, Aubrey, you're just gonna stop watching a TV show. It's not that big of a deal.
But like, not on Street Fight.
It is a big deal. I mean, it's a big deal because of what you're saying. I'm a huge wrestling fan, and it's insane to say you're a wrestling fan and not at least pay some attention to WWE. That's nuts, right? But you know, the thing is, it felt disingenuous to me. Right? Like, why? Like, I just didn't feel like, and it's not so much, and this isn't a situation where I'm not advocating a boycott or anything, because again, like, it's like artist separation. It's a very personal choice, and there's no wrong answer. It's just whatever feels comfortable to you. But for me, what made me feel most uncomfortable was the idea, not just that I was watching it and that I was like paying $9.99, because at the end of the day, me watching it and my $9.99 make zero difference in anything, right? What gave me pause and what made me uncomfortable was the fact that I was part of their marketing plan.
Yeah. And relentlessly positive on their product. Like, that is, it's incredible. I mean, like, so are you watching it?
So
Are you back to watching it?
No, man. I have not watched since Royal Rumble.
Oh, my God.
That's the last WWE programming I'll watch. I canceled my network subscription. I am no longer covering WWE on Straight Shoot. And so it's the cutting off a limb thing. Like, it's not just a big deal because, you know, again, I love wrestling and I love so many wrestlers. I love WWE wrestling specifically, right? It's not just a big deal because of that, but like, this is I'm going to lose money because of this, right? Because the fact of the matter is, like, a lot of people who watch my show, you know, as I was talking about earlier, there are people who just kind of follow me anywhere and they're ride or die. And I'm going to keep talking about wrestling. I'm going to talk about New Japan and Ring of Honor and Evolve and PWG and do one-off episodes. It's going to be a really good show. In fact, I think it might turn into a better show than what it was previously.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
At the end of the day, I'm not talking about Raw and SmackDown. And there's a significant part of my audience that's what they want to hear. So I'm under no illusions. I'm going to lose money from doing this. But I don't know. Like, it just didn't feel... it's not a boycott thing where I'm trying to make this big like moral stand and make a big deal out of it. It just didn't feel comfortable to me anymore. I just didn't like it. It made me feel bad. It made me feel bad going on and promoting their shit when I know that they were promoting bigoted actions, bigoted and illegal and unconstitutional actions from a wannabe fascist regime. I'm not like that. That made me uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I understand that because, you know, we watch, but it's not a big part of Street Fight. We were covering them pretty regularly a while ago, but it's an in passing thing to go out and put more eyeballs on it. I completely understand. And as it goes, man, it is the what everyone's talking about. If you're trying to get popular on the internet and make money from it, like, that's how you're going to catch the most fish. That's the biggest bait.
I mean, and you and when you'll agree with me on this, Brett, and probably you too, Aubrey. Well, maybe not now, you won't, but you would have a month ago, that like,
if you listen to a wrestling podcast and they consciously avoid talking about WWE, that makes you a little mad sometimes.
I don't mind it.
I think I honestly feel like there's a lot of podcasts out there for wrestling that say they do indie stuff, and they usually just end up comparing it to like WWE feuds or spending most of their time doing WWE stuff. And there is, I feel like, a real need for someone to just cover everything that is not WWE.
There's a significant, you know, like it's like anything. It's like music or TV shows or film or whatever. There's a significant segment of the wrestling population that thinks that there's a direct relationship between how obscure something is and how good it is, right? So like WWE obviously sucks because it's mainstream, man, and it's the most popular, and what you really got to watch is this promotion coming out of Little Rock these days, you know, or like whatever it is, right? Whatever fucking thing. And so like, yeah, I mean, there's definitely some of that, and yeah, I think that I don't think I'm gonna lose my audience overnight or anything, right? Because I do, like, again, I've always made decisions to kind of cultivate a specific audience rather than to cultivate. I've always said that I would rather have the right audience than a big audience.
That's us too.
Yeah. I mean,
you're talking to anarchists.
Yeah, dude. I mean, but, like, that's the thing I've always done. So like, yeah, I mean, I think that people are going to be in, I hope people are willing to hang around and see what we do, because I think it's going to be really interesting. But yeah, it's funny, man. And I've seen a lot of, like, one of the things I feel like you guys would appreciate this. One of the things that, so I haven't, you know, as we're recording this, I've not made this announcement publicly yet, right? But I have been talking more and more publicly about just kind of distaste for WWE and like not really being thrilled about, and I've mentioned it at the top of my shows about like how uncomfortable I am watching it and stuff like that. And I've had some people respond to me on Twitter with basically what amounts to is, you know, oh, well, you know, the McMahons are separate from WWE, which is like a crazy distinction, I feel like, to make already. But then they go on to say, oh, and, you know, really, if you look at WWE, they're very socially progressive. You know, they've done the Women's Revolution and the New Day. Those guys are black, if you haven't noticed. And they've held the titles for over, you know, they beat Demolition's record. It's very, very progressive. You know, like they're socially progressive, even if they're like fiscally conservative. And that enrages me because I think it's so similar to so much of the left's view on what it is to be left, right? Where like it doesn't really matter if you are a company that exploits its workers to an absurd degree by treating, like, making them behave like employees, even though you don't do any of the stuff you should for employees. Like, all wrestlers are independent contractors, which should be illegal because they don't actually have the freedom of independent contractors, but WWE gets away with it. They don't, you know, they don't pay into unemployment or Social Security. They no health insurance for these guys, nothing. Like how like the weird sleight of hand magic trick that people do to like shove that aside and then point and say, oh, look, but they put two women in the main event. So that's liberal, right?
That was the argument for voting for Hillary Clinton.
Exactly.
In this election,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's why it riles me up so much, because it's the exact reason why we lost so badly. It's the exact reason why we lost so bad. And then to have people saying that to me about WWE, like, it really just, like, it makes me angry, but it also makes me realize that, oh, this is the right choice. This is the right thing for me to be doing. Stop and watching this shit.
I want to say that I listened to your first show, the one after the Rumble. I'm listening to it and you're like, you know, I didn't watch Raw. And I want to be honest, when somebody says that when I'm listening to a wrestling podcast, I usually am like, what the fuck are we doing here then?
Yeah, I agree.
But you explained yourself and I was like, I'm gonna keep listening to this. You know what I mean? Not only because you're a nice dude, but I like your podcast. Like, well, thanks, I listened and I like loved it. I really liked it. It, you know what it felt like?
Was this the one with Andy Bellinger, the comic book artist and wrestler?
Yeah. I listen to a lot of wrestling podcasts and they all have the same vibe. I get the same feeling. out of any of the wrestling podcasts I listen to, and I listen to this one, and I'm like, you know what? This isn't like, because you can do vintage reviews and stuff like that. You can do reviews, and Brett and I hate. We've decided that, you know, if we're going to do any more wrestling content on Street Fight, it's not going to be reviews at all. You know?
Yeah. I don't like that talking about every match, like calling every match thing is like, I want to get back to talking about what makes wrestling good. Like what's my favorite shit.
And I mean, in the show, he did it. That's the way they talked about it. It was like this non-specific thing. Like you can go back and reference old wrestlers. It's not like you're not allowed to talk about the WWE ever again.
Exactly. I mean, it would be impossible. It would be impossible for me, right? Because it defines so much of my wrestling fandom. But yeah, man, I mean, that's always been part of the approach of the show, is to use what happened, what we just watched, as a way to talk about broader wrestling storytelling and like how it works and why and stuff. Like some of my favorite episodes, Roderick Strong, who's now in NXT, just tearing shit up. He's a pal of mine. He used to come on my show a lot back before he was signed by WWE, obviously. And we would watch matches and we would get really nitty gritty. And he and I would go back and forth and talk about like beat by beat, like why the matches worked and like what worked and what didn't and why. And like sometimes I would just be like, listen, I don't know why I didn't like this. And he would explain, like he would tell me why I didn't like it. That's right. Dope. And but that was always my favorite shit. And like, yeah, I think that there's other ways, you know, I think that the topical angle is like the smartest, best marketing way to do it, right? Because you kind of have to kill two birds that way. But I think there's other ways to get into those like broader wrestling storytelling issues.
Yeah, I mean, it's wide open with talent nowadays, and New Japan is still not getting the coverage it needs to get. And there's a lot you can dive into that, man. I agree. Like, I like you can pull up so much wrestling on YouTube or Daily Motion nowadays. I've watched so much old All Japan stuff that I would love to, you know, would be great to talk about. And I'm sure people would like to see, you know,
thing, yeah. I mean, like
isolating a badass match and talking about it, it seems like just as valuable as talking about what AJ Styles puttered around with.
More valuable most of the time, you know, like I scheduled out like my next month and we're covering. So next week we're covering New Japan Pro Wrestling, New Beginning in Osaka. Then after that, I'm covering PWG, which I'll have been to like a few days before.
You are lucky. That's
tight. We have to do a street fight out there when they're doing it.
Yeah, we need to get out there and get into this thing.
It's the best. It's the best thing.
We're seeing the weekend before you record this Saturday, Brett and I are going to go see Abdul the Butcher and Bushwhacker Luke.
Whoa. That's either going to be really amazing or really sad or both.
Both. It'll be a story.
I'm betting on both. That's where I put my money.
Yeah, it's going to be a story no matter what.
I'm doing PWG, I'm doing Evolve, then CWF, which is a really interesting promotion out of like the Carolinas, then Ring of Honor, then Progress. There's so much to talk about every week. Yeah. There's something rad going on, and I'm excited about the fact that now instead of spending 5 hours a week watching only WWE, I can watch this other stuff. I can see different wrestlers, guys who I haven't seen 8 million times.
Well, I want to say this too before there's two reasons that Roddy Strong's one of my favorite wrestlers. One is listening to I liked him when he was on your show back when he was doing it before he was in WWE, and Brett and I saw him versus Tanahashi live, and it was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
That was a dope match. That was the one where they got all bloody, right?
Yeah, that
was amazing.
We seriously thought we were like, this is going to be some squash fest, and his fucking face got ripped open. I'm like, I think he's going to win this match.
That's so good. So good.
It was heart of a championship too. Yeah, just there was really good angles, and like it was perfect. The faces, all of it was like, I was buying into it. What I always say to my wife sometimes is she's like, I don't know, I don't get it. And I'm like, these people are you know, I know you think it's just a soap opera, but they have to live every single moment of it out there. They're not like taking breaks at all. It's 40, you know, it's 20, 30 minutes of doing this, you know.
Yeah, it's nuts.
There's a lot to get into. And like, it's, you know what I think is the most disappointing thing to me? It's like when really smart people that I know can't understand wrestling. Like they can go on and on about plays and books
some
and
shit from NPR,
right? Or Prestige TV.
I'll tell you the craziest thing, even crazier than that. So I worked at Marvel Comics 2005 to 2008, right? I actually left there to go work at WWE. When I was working at Marvel, though, This is 2005, 2008. If you remember wrestling in 2005 to 2008, terrible.
We don't remember it.
You're better off that way.
It's really lousy. It's really bad. I mean, and there were some bright lights for sure, you know, like because you still had Shawn Michaels and Undertaker wrestling weekly, and that's cool, but it was rough. Like they had not done a good job of building new talent in a really long time, and that's why it sucked. But anyway, so wrestling wasn't as popular as it is now. It wasn't like a cool thing to like. Because now you go to – I have friends at Marvel still, and like everybody loves wrestling. It's cool. It's fun. They'll get together and watch pay-per-views, and it's like a hip, cool thing. It wasn't when I was there, but I was very – adamant wrestling fan, and in meetings there were guys who were like higher ranking editors than I was who would rip on me in the middle of these like full editorial meetings for liking wrestling. And like one time I snapped and I said, motherfucker, you edit the third Spider-Man book. Like what, like what, like what, like what the fuck, like what do you, and I don't think, I don't know if that was the actual, but I said something like, you know, about like some shitty book that that guy edited. Like, why is, like, in what universe do you think, like, the third cash-in Spider-Man book is, like, more art, like, it's more valid art with a capital A than these amazing, athletic, live theater improvisers? Like what kind of twisted version of your world are those things? Not like it just Spider-Man come out on top. I thought it was crazy. It's the craziest fucking thing.
And I think that anybody who is even semi intelligent can look at what's going on. Like if somebody sits down with me and they're willing to open up to it, I can tell them every reason why they would love it and they would get into it. But it takes somebody that's comfortable.
You gotta let your guard down. I mean, you're engaging in like lowbrow art, you know? Yeah. Like you're doing something that people can make fun of you for, and it'll make you feel shameful.
Yeah. I mean, it's a truly populist art form, right? And it's very, very accessible. And I think the reason people, I think, sometimes have a hard time getting into it or wrapping their brains around it is I think it's presented to them in the wrong way. You know, I think that there are a lot of people who hear, oh, like it's soap opera for boys. And like, yeah, it kind of is. Like, I understand that comparison, but that's not what's best about it. You know? No,
sure. You're right.
So a lot of times the way it's framed and offered up to people, I think it's done in a way where they're like, I'm not surprised that they don't like it, you know? Like, I don't know, there's like the you can't have like a smart conversation about wrestling without bringing this thing up, and I feel super cliche talking about it, but have you read the Roland Barthes essay about wrestling?
No,
I don't know it.
Okay, it's a, you know, Roland Barthes, right? Like the French structuralist writer.
No.
Listen, boys, I'm gonna say y'all read it. There's gonna be a fucking recommended reading list for this episode. Okay,
I'm getting it. I'm on Google right now.
So Roland Barthes, yeah, you can find this online. It's great. It's a great read. So he is a legit French philosopher and art critic, and or he's dead now, but he's a structuralist, right? And he wrote an essay on wrestling, and it's amazing. And it's just all about he talks about it a lot as like an American art form, but also the value of spectacle, and about how that's like, that's one of the cores of it. And I don't think that's the core of it, because again, for me, it's all about just two people beating the shit out of each other, right? Like that's the true appeal. But it's a fascinating thing, and I think that, you know, if presented in the proper way, yeah, I think anybody with half a brain can understand how wrestling is really great. But it's just, you know, I think that too often people, I'm trying to think of a good example. I don't know. They just they talk up the wrong aspects of it. They talk up the parts of it that aren't the best of it.
Right. Yeah. And I think also there's this, there is also this belief that everybody in the audience actually thinks these guys are fighting right now, and that they're throwing full punches. And
it's no fun. It's no fun if like they think it's like, it's no fun if they think everybody knows that it's worked, because they can't make fun of the audience. They can't have the ironic detachment.
Right.
Away from the audience, if they're like, they have to feel like they're making fun of the audience to enjoy it. Almost,
yeah, which is
make fun of it,
which definitely exists in wrestling fandom even now, right? You know, like there's like this weird ironic detachment that's like really evident when you hear people's chants and stuff like that, and like the signs they bring, and like dressing up at ringside and all. But yeah, dude, I mean, that's any wrestling fan is sick and tired of hearing, oh, well, you know, it's fake. Because, yeah, obviously, like, so is fucking Game of Thrones. But that didn't actually happen, dummy. That's,
Brett always says Game of Thrones.
That's the best example. Because every asshole who thinks they're smart by telling you that wrestling is fake jerks off to fucking dragon porn, right?
They have the Lord of the Rings collector set with a
I call that stuff too, right? I love Lord of the Rings. I love Game of Thrones too. But like, let's not fool ourselves and act like that is like how is that different? It's not. You know, the only difference is that you can't go see Daenerys and her dragons live. Therefore, wrestling is better.
Right.
Wrestling is the best.
Also, there's not very many places you can go boo and scream hateful things at somebody. There's not very much live entertainment where that's encouraged. Street fight shows, it's encouraged as
There's nothing I like better than just screaming boo at the top of my lungs.
Get looking somebody in the eye and booing them.
I really hate wrestling chants. Like, I'm really adamantly against them, but I'm really pro people being loud at wrestling shows. And people always ask me, like, oh, well, you know, well, if you don't want people chanting, what do you want them doing? Like, what else can they do? And I was like, there's tons of things you can do. You can scream boo. You can scream yeah. You can scream break his fucking arm off. There's all these great things you can scream without turning it into like a sing-songy chant that's all about you performing your clever fandom. You know?
It's like when you watch. I watched the Mig Memphis. Have you ever heard of the Mig Memphis videos?
No.
Okay, so before Vince McMahon turned heel with Stone Cold Steve Austin, mm-hmm. he did a test in Memphis.
Oh shit!
Where he was the heel to Jerry Lawler's, you know, like Memphis.
Yeah, because they were working with USWA at that time, right?
Yeah, and they were like cutting these like Vince McMahon was cutting these weird pseudo promos where he's a baby face in front of New York, but then they could play the promo in Memphis and he's like a heel, you know, he's standing in New York saying these Memphis idiots, and the New
York's like, doing the Andy Kaufman thing,
fuck
right?
Memphis, you know what I mean? So like I was watching that and watching there is a match where Vince is sitting outside. There's a match between Jerry Lawler and a referee, right? Okay. Yeah. There's some more. Vince and Pat Patterson are sitting in chairs outside of the ring watching it. And Lawler gets out of the ring chasing the referee who's running, and Vince trips him and then denies that he did anything in front of the audience.
That's amazing. And
looking at the audience at that, right? They weren't chanting, "This is awesome." It was guttural. They were so fucking mad.
They were pissed.
That's the thing I think that another thing that I think people misunderstand about wrestling is they think that it's this crowd participation thing where you want to go and like perform you're meant to be part of the show, not to become the show. Yeah. Right. And I think that there's like a social contract. When you go to a wrestling show, you agree to play into this live event. Right. And there are some requirements. Right. One of them is you cheer the good guys. Another one is you boo the bad guys. And I guarantee, like, even though, like, I know, like, I'm talking to like imaginary shithead right now, but like, yeah, I know you hate Roman Reigns and you think the heels are so interesting and they're so fun. But I guarantee you will have 8 million times more fun if you just boo the guys that you're supposed to, if you just cheer the guys that you're supposed to, because that's how the thing is designed. Like, it's designed to get your rocks off by participating in these morality plays. That's what it is.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. I mean, I just buy in and like, I hate that guy. I hate the way he did that. I don't like this guy's bad. And I don't like the way he kicked.
Look, he's cheating.
I don't like the way he punched.
He's cheating. Look at that.
Right. The first time Brett and I saw wrestling live, was at a Ring of Honor show. I'm sorry. I thought we lost you there. So we're at a Ring of Honor show and the Addiction comes out, right?
Oh, cool.
And
those guys are pros.
Brett absolutely hated them from the second they walked out. He's like, who are these guys? Fuck these guys. And yeah. I was just like, I listed it off in front of everybody. I drug them through the mud. Their clothing, their choice of haircuts, everything.
Good.
He was so fucking mad at them that like
that's why I like doing it. That's why I like, and that's why you can have fun at any of the shows. Like, I've been to so many bottom basement wrestling shows where it's like, I can still have a good time with this shit.
Just boo the heels.
Yeah.
Boo the heels. My favorite thing to do is scream at the ref too.
Yeah. I do too.
Open your eyes, ref. That's my favorite thing. Just to pretend, because that's the thing. You pretend it's real, right? That's why it's fun, right? And so, like, there's nothing that makes me laugh more than just getting like apoplectic, like bug-eyed, like red-faced rage over the ref not paying enough attention. That kills me. It makes me laugh so hard. Like, I do it and then start giggling to myself. It's my favorite.
Yeah, I know that, like, I watched this match where they did – I saw an indie match once where they did the two count and then foot up on the rope spot. Mm-hmm. They did it in every match and then in another – and then they did it twice in a match. And as soon as they did it, I just went like this. Come on, buddy. Get some ring presence in there.
Like, ring awareness. Yeah. Ring awareness.
Yeah, come on, man. So I wanted to talk – we wanted to – before we go, before we finish this episode, I wanted to talk about your other projects because I know you do Scald, and I have not listened to that, but I think we have listeners that would be Brett would actually be interested in it.
So Scald is a weird thing. Scald – like everything I – like, you know, all of my DIY stuff, it's niche. It's designed to be that way, right? It's for a specific audience. And it's so Scald had its origins in, you know, so I write comic books, right? I'm writing G.I. Joe right now for IDW publishing, but I was getting frustrated because I didn't like my comic book stuff was like so start and stop. Like now I've got the ongoing G.I. Joe, but a year ago I didn't have an ongoing gig. And so I was irritated that I didn't have like consistent, like serialized storytelling stuff out in the world. And I tried to do web comics and things, but I don't know. You can't rely on anybody. Everybody, yeah. Like, right? Like nobody, like you, like I can at least, right? Like,
no, it's tough, man. And especially, I mean, paying people too. It's
well, that's
like,
the thing. I didn't have a budget to pay people. So like I needed folks who were willing to work with me on spec on a thing. And, you know, they got better gigs or they just fell off the face of the earth or whatever. Like I don't hold it against them, but it was just impossible. And so I figured, okay, well, you know, I know I'm a good storyteller and I've been doing straight shoot for so long that I know I'm a good talker too. Fuck it. I'll just do an ongoing sword and sorcery serial podcast. I write a new chapter every week. I've been doing it for over a year and a half. I think episode 99 is up now.
Dude, that's fucking tight. That is dope, man.
I do a new one every week. I write it and then I read it. I do it live to tape, right? And I do it in one take. Like that's part of the conceit of it because like initially the reason I decided to do that was because I didn't want to deal with learning how to edit audio. That's why I do straight shoot live as well, right?
That's it's just
put it out there. It's fine.
I mean, yeah, that's exactly the ethos of Street Fight was like get done what you can today. Like exactly. I don't think I'm going to get like a million people to listen to us talk about taking down the government so that I can sell a Blue Apron ad. So we're going to have to figure out other ways to generate income.
and so the street sheet, I mean, the Scald thing. So it started off as like kind of like a like very, like very much influenced by Michael Moorcock. If you're familiar with like his Elric stuff, it's like weird, trippy, psychedelic sword and sorcery stuff. And it's this big, intense, super violent, lots of fighting sword and sorcery serial, but it's not like a radio serial like a lot of like podcasts do. You know, there's no wacky voices or sound effects or music cues or anything. It's just me and my voice. And I do it straight through every single week. And if I make a mistake, I delete it and I start over again. Every episode is like between like 30 and 60 minutes. So some of them get really long, which can be kind of trying sometimes. But yeah, man, it's I'm really proud of it. It's very weird. The people who like it really love it. It's available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, streaming at scald.podomatic.com. It's SKALD. And it's also on YouTube. I have all the episodes on YouTube now, too. If you'd rather listen to it there, just search for Scald on YouTube. It's funny, man. Like, it's a thing. I tell people it's like Conan the Barbarian as read by the Ultimate Warrior.
I was going to ask. I was going to say, it sounds to me like that warrior type shit that, you know, we had our Conan the Barbarian, but we've kind of lost that. I mean, people are more into the politics of the medieval. I think more people are interested in like dukes and duchesses and not just like the people that were killing gigantic.
Well, that's the difference between, like, I mean, this is very much designed to be sword and sorcery. And I mean, like, not to get too nerdy on you, but like, there's a big difference. I was talking to a friend of mine last night and I was like, you know, my favorite sword and sorcery story, if I had to rank my favorite sword and sorcery stuff, it probably goes Conan, Elric, and then the Bible. right? Like Old Testament, like it's just gnarly and like magic and sorcerers and bloody battles and stuff. And he's like, you don't put Lord of the Rings on there? I was like, motherfucker, Lord of the Rings is epic fantasy. How dare you?
Because it's different. Know your subgenres.
How dare you, sir? But no, it's different. I mean, and this is very much designed to be this brutal, dick-swinging, mean, weird thing. And like, I take weird detours and just, cause it's just whatever the fuck I want to talk about each week. And a scald. And so I don't know if y'all know this, but like a scald, the reason it's called that is a scald is basically a Scandinavian bard, right? Who would memorize and write and memorize these like big, sagas, right? Like, you know, whether you're talking about in Sweden or Finland or Iceland or Norway or whatever, they would memorize these big sagas and they would hang out in the courts of their kings and their jarls. And they would tell these kind of like epic dick swinging tales about like Vikings stomping across the tundra and things. And so, yeah, it's very much meant to be that kind of vibe. And I do it weekly. The audio is up. But if you want the prose versions, I put the prose volumes on Amazon. As ebooks, people can pick up those too.
Holy shit, man, that's fucking incredible! I'm way impressed by that. That's dope. I would love to get the time to do that.
Him and I used to do a lot of written stuff on the show, but we just let it all fall by the wayside.
It's a lot of work, man. I mean, so like with the prose volumes, it's really just like I realized like, that wasn't part of the plan initially, but I just all of a sudden I realized, oh shit, I've got a novel worth of stuff that I've written for this fucking thing. And so I really, you know, I throw it up on Amazon, not to make money, but really just to hopefully direct people back to the podcast, because that's how it's meant to be enjoyed, you know. But like the sixth volume just went on sale this week.
That's fucking dope. That's awesome. Yeah. So yeah. So I do have to ask though, a quick G.I. Joe question. Which one is your favorite?
Which G.I.
or like Joe? What's the best action figure? Like,
are you making fun of me right now? After we just talked about people making fun of people for being wrestling, are you making fun of me into G.I. Joe?
No. Brett and I were both like enormous G.I. Joe kids when we were kids.
Here's how I used to play with my G.I. Joes. I would say, all right, we're going to get ready for an adventure. And I would take all of the accessories and I would attach it to like all the pockets and put all the weapons in their hand. And then I would get them to their place. And I'm like, all right, now we need to, you know, I would just obsessed with how much came with them. I think like, I just love to put all of their snow job was one of my probably my favorite ones.
Snow job's a lot of people's favorite. I don't know why that is. It's very strange to me.
I wanted it more than anything. Like I was in a household that was not skiing. I just knew that my family was not cut from skiing cloth. And I was like, this motherfucker shoots a gun and skis. I think I'm going to aspire to be snow job. He's like being the president to me.
So yeah. my favorites now, cause I'm right in the series that like my favorites now are Rock and Roll and Quick Kick because I'm doing really neat things with them. Myself and Yanni and Lover and the art team on it. We're doing really cool things with those. But my favorites as a kid were actually, so I never read the Hama stuff as a kid. So I was a little too young, the Larry Hama stuff. And I watched the cartoon, but it was in syndication. And so it was never really clear on when it came on. So it just, you know, I saw it when I saw it and I wasn't super religious about it, but I loved the toys. And so, you know, I had my own head canon about who all these characters were. and my favorite ones were just the ones that looked the coolest, right? Very shallow, right? It's just based on looks. Yeah. And it was Storm Shadow, who I was like, as an adult, I was shocked. Like I was probably in my 20s before I realized that everybody loved Snake Eyes more than Storm Shadow. I was floored because I thought that Storm Shadow was obviously the cooler one because first of all, he's actually Japanese. Also, I had like the hooded camo, like hooded sweatshirt version, which I thought is just like the dopest costume ever. Like so much cooler than like Snake Eyes and his stupid metal visor or whatever the fuck.
I agree. No, I agree. I absolutely. That was my exact same process of thinking.
I love Storm Shadow. And then the other one that I loved was Xandar because that's one of the toys I had. And I was convinced, again, I was an adult. I was an adult human being before I realized that Xandar was not like a punk rock Cherokee. I thought he was a Native American because he has like the war paint and like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I just, as a kid, like, I just like, oh yeah, he's American Indian. And I thought that was just the coolest thing in the world that he was like this punk rock Indian with pink stuff on.
He was the cheap. I think he was the cheapest character because everybody had. Actually, he was the one that nobody wanted to buy. Like Xandar
was my favorite. He was a good guy. He was a good guy when I played with him. He was like the hero. He was the one who came to everybody's rescue.
I was a big fan of Dusty as well, because they had the claw, the toy, the 3¼-inch or 3¾, whatever, the small one had like a little cloth that hung over the back of his neck.
Oh, I love toys with cloths. Yeah. Oh.
It was filthy by the time it sat in the bottom of my toy box, but it was one of my favorite. I also was a huge fan of, they had there's like ripcord helicopter things. Mm-hmm. So they had like on the top.
Ripcord was the name of a guy too.
Well, it was like,
he was like the paratrooper dude.
Yeah, but it was but it's like you pull it real hard and they fly in the air, and it was
Oh, yeah.
That was the height of toys for me. Like I loved the shit out of those. I also had a bunch of hand-me-down ones too, so.
I just, Brett and I always dream of like writing wrestling. Like we have a dream in our heart that it, and we know we couldn't do this in WWE, right? But if somebody just gave us Luke Harper, we could make him the most over guy on the planet. Like, man. I want him skipping child support payments in each town.
Man, my goal when I started at WWE, I worked at WWE.com, and I was really open with people about that when they hired me. I was like, listen, my goal is I want to go on the road, and I want to be on the creative team. I want to write wrestling. That's what I want to do, because I wanted to write comics, but I also want to write wrestling. So this is another thing I liked, right? And I really quickly lost that as a goal and a dream once I learned how miserable that life is for those folks. Because it's there's so many. It's not the thing I always tell people. It's not like writing John Cena isn't like writing Spider-Man, because John Cena is an actual human being, right? And yeah. Spider-Man is not. You can have Spider-Man do whatever you want, but John Cena might get injured. He might have a movie he has to go film. You might have to like worry about like how his merchandise is moving, and that affects the bottom line, and like all these other concerns on top of the fact that, you know, the wrestlers, as they become bigger, they have more of a say in like what they get to do and like what creative angles they're done with. So like, I don't know. I think a lot of people, and this is why I don't do fantasy booking on my show, is I think a lot of people have this idea of like, oh, well, if WWE just had good writers, if they just wrote it well, it would be great. And they should just hire me because I know how to do it. And the answer to that is, well, no, for like 8 million reasons, not least of which is that writing wrestling, like doing wrestling storytelling is unlike any other storytelling. And there's a reason why they fill the creative meeting rooms with former wrestlers. And there's a reason that they have former wrestlers working as the road agents or the producers or whatever you want to call it, because it's this very specific kind of like secret set of knowledge about how this stuff works and how to progress. And, you know, it's, I think another thing people always forget too, is that WWE isn't in the business of telling good stories. They might say that they are, but they're not. They're in the business of getting you to watch tomorrow.
Yes. Yeah. That's
and
why.
That doesn't always line up with telling a good story. In fact, it rarely does, you know, because like the most important thing to them isn't a fulfilling narrative arc. It's popping you, getting you excited right now, getting your however many dollars for a t-shirt right now, and making sure you're watching tomorrow night.
That's what's romantic about it. That's
it's rad. It's great. Love
it. We're big Carney fans over here. Like
it's totally Carney.
Yeah. All right, man. I'm so like, it's just exciting for me to talk to the guy that's writing G.I. Joe.
We didn't even talk about it, dude. Have me back sometime. This is I love yammering about myself, obviously. I've done it for however long right now. No, this is super fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we'll have you back, man. We got this third show we got to do. We're going to be having a lot of people. We're going to have a lot of regulars.
Let's fill some content, baby.
Absolutely. And if you want to hear the rest of that, it happens every single week, 3 times a week. Just look for Street Fight Radio on iTunes or SoundCloud. Also, all of the 1 million Android podcasting apps, you can get Street Fight Radio there. Even on Amazon Echoes and Dots, just ask Alexa about us. Say, Alexa, turn on Street Fight Radio on TuneIn, and she'll take care of the rest. We are going to continue our march towards a horizontally organized world that parties more than it works and creates a better situation than what we're currently in, hopefully. We don't have all the plan figured out yet, but I figure if enough of you listen and start working together, we're totally going to take this shit over in 2017. So tune in, find us on Facebook, find us on Twitter, find us on Instagram, find us on Snapchat. The name is the same. It's at Street Fight WCRS on all those platforms, and we will see you soon.
Peace. Aubrey, give your website.
Oh, yeah.
We'll let you have the last word there, man.
Thanks, man. Everything's Aubrey Sitterson. AubreySitterson. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, all that stuff. Or go to AubreySitterson.com that has links to absolutely everything I've talked about tonight and my social media and contact information and, you know, links to buy my comics, all that good stuff. AubreySitterson.com.
All right, man. Thanks for doing this show for
us. Thank you for having me.